There we go. We are now recording. So here we are on the 19th of December, about 21 years since you were doing this the last time.
I did want to say, now, I want to make sure, you're the writer.
I'm the writer.
And I would treat you as a writer interviewing me like you would anybody else. And one of my campaigns, my campaign manager said, now, and he was very good,
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, this, and this, but if you don't do it, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm not going to moan and groan.
Yeah.
So I don't expect to intrude on what you're doing, but who knows what.
Yeah, exactly.
And that if I do anything like that, and you don't want to do it, don't do it.
Oh, absolutely.
But you and I will still remain there.
Yeah.
You know, I have to have you as objective as you can.
Right,
and,
right.
I understand that.
Yeah, good, good, good. Very good. Yeah, as I've been looking at the oral history, and I certainly have not read it all. That's part of the process. But I've looked at the oral history, but also watching the way people act around you. They're definitely treating you as the governor. You're definitely the center of things. And that's one thing that I wanted to push on with you. And then, lo and behold, as I was reading things, just kind of getting ready, and so I picked one of the tapes, and Clark Hansen asked you about your leadership. And you very clearly said, when I was governor, I discovered I liked being the sole decision maker. When I was working with my brothers, it was a collaborative, but, you know, a very together effort that had its tensions.
Yeah.
And then you told your brothers, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
And so that all of a sudden made a lot of sense in the way people act around you. You know,
yeah.
you're the decision maker. And in this process, you're clearly making decisions, but I'm the decision maker. And so, you know, it's a different thing, but it's something that I will want to explore in the future.
Well, yeah. The way I would look at it to make it a useful book,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not really complaining about Governor Roberts. She has a biography,
mm-hmm.
and she did it.
Yep.
And I enjoyed reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But let me give you an example. We went through the recession, and you will find out, or know, because you know, that I had a lot to do with holding down, I didn't have to hold on the Democrats, but we had to cooperate.
Right.
And what I'm really aiming at is that Vecchia did this, and he's a neat guy on that, but what I want in it is about the recession. In other words, somebody gets something out of it besides Vecchia was there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it becomes a useful book.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I'm aiming for. I want this to be something people can pick up 50 years from now and say, you know, when they did this, they had these three options, and they really explored these, and this is why they chose this, but they would have been happy with this as well. That's what I want them to pick up.
Well, I think our ground rules are pretty well laid out.
I think so.
I
think so.
You and I will talk. You know how I feel, and I'm delighted. I'm, as a matter of fact, very happy because you have institutional memory for something that you were there and you know what went on. And,
yeah.
And it's that kind of thing that was better than anyone else that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm ready for you. Just fire away.
Okay. Well, the first thing I wanted to get into is in your oral history, 1,900 pages of it, you have several places where you have marked down things that you thought the oral history didn't quite get at in the right way, or the wording might have been something you wanted to rethink, or those kinds of things. And so...
No. Usually it is... It those that are highlighted, this is who Rickety is. That's how I'm modeling.
Uh-huh.
I should get one on a minute, but I would say something like, I can't remember, but basically it was not something to correct something else.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I want to label that one. That's who Vicky is.
Okay.
And so that's why it's there.
Right. So it gets at you as a person or a decision maker or something along those lines.
Yeah. To help you a little bit, and maybe I'm wrong, but I always had a feeling that it was sort of a standoffish with the business folks.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me money, they were my friends, we didn't have any arguments.
Right.
But only recently, and this sounds funny, it's kind of years later.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been in the legislature 20 years, I'd been in the retail business. I didn't need any blue ribbon things going.
Right.
I knew who was good in the bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to my department heads, now I'm asking you to do this because I know you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And besides that, I expect you to do it. That's what I would tell them. And so they would do that. In other words, they knew I wasn't looking over their shoulder
right.
every day, you know. And so I suppose to the extent that he stand off my shoulder, and I'm not, you know, the door was open, my friends could call, they could mm-hmm. do whatever. But I think that they weren't quite in charge as much as they thought they should be.
Why do you think that was? Do you think it was because you were kind of Portland retail rather than running a timber company? Do you think it was that because you'd been in the legislature for so long, they had kind of started to think of you as a government person? I mean, why do you think that was?
I don't know how they came to the conclusion,
mm-hmm.
but unknowingly, and I just figured this out, that I knew, you know, I knew what had that.
Okay.
I knew it. I mean, I was 20 years. And I created, or saw it created, or helped create
mm-hmm.
a lot of what government was.
Right.
So to me, I didn't have to find out about it.
Okay.
What you call the rubber meets the road. The rubber met the road the first day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't have to flounder around. My successor, for a variety of reasons, but this one is the case, we set it up. For whoever was going to be governor,
right.
Norma or my successor. And, of course, my successor won. He came in to see me, and we had the program. It's all written down. It's,
mm-hmm.
He asked me one question. How many computers do you have? That's all he asked me. Not who does this or where do you go. And so he had to figure out everything himself. And so it was at least a year before he had any contact with the government. And that's not necessarily accusing. It just says most of them that came to it didn't have what I had, and it's just. You just stop to think that I came along at a time when what I had was an important thing.
Right.
It just happened to be that way. And anyway, when you talk to Jerry, she and Denny both say I was stubborn. Now, I don't know that I was stubborn. So find out.
Yeah.
I want to find out where all this stuff is.
Exactly.
Okay. You know, that's far away.
You know, it's interesting when you're talking about the change in the administrations, because I've heard from two people similar type things. One from Denny,
yeah,
of course, who set it up for the press secretary coming in, and they butted heads, and it never worked. But also from Vern Duncan. And he didn't have the impression, because he was an elected official, you know, from his own point of view, but he knew when he talked with you that he could, A, get a hold of you, and B, when the phone conversation was over, then you got your staff to work on whatever that was so it would happen. And with your successor, he could hardly get through, and if he did, there was never any follow-through.
Yeah.
And so it was frustrating for him. It was frustrating for him. And that also went on. He had similar problems with Governor Roberts, not in terms of getting through to her, but in terms of follow-through. But you kind of had the perfect, from his point of view, kind of the perfect, from the top down, there was a system where you could talk things, figure things out, negotiate, and then things would happen.
It all began, Jim, and before I was sworn in,
mm-hmm.
and we were putting our deal together. Lynn Newbery was my budget guy. He was Ways and Means and smart.
And his daughter and I went to school together in Medford. So.
Okay.
Yes.
And Travis Cross was my administrative guy.
Uh-huh.
And eventually got Lee Johnson. And we sat in a room, talk about taxes, and there's Lee Johnson and Lynn Newbery. And so I said, okay. So they, one talked for quite a while, and Lynn talked for quite a while, and I'm sitting listening. And when they were all through, I said, fine. Now we're going to do it this way. Which was not any of their, what they mm-hmm. were telling.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it, that I'd been on taxes for a long time. So I said, no. I didn't say no. I said, we're going to do it this way. And that was an advantage I had, and I didn't realize it. But I had an advantage
mm-hmm.
of having been there 20 years. I don't know if we've ever had a governor that's had that much schooling before.
No. The closest, I mean, Kitzhaber had a lot, but not 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stunning. And Oregon is, when we look at in political science speak at the rest of the country, there are strong governors and weak governors.
Yeah.
Texas and Arkansas are notable for weak governors, and they produced two presidents in Bush and Clinton. Oregon's in the middle. Oregon's in the middle. The yeah. governor has a lot of power, but the legislature is so crucial. You have to be able to work the legislature or nothing happens.
Yeah.
And you clearly were someone who learned well what made the legislature work.
Yeah.
And how to deal with that when you were on the other side not on the other side, in between the two houses up there.
I told them, I met with the leadership for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
That changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I told those at least, well, everyone that we knew, whoever, that, except for those that were re-elected, I said, I'm not going to blindside you. I'm not going to go after you. I'm not going to, you do something that I don't like, and I'm going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said, you won't believe that, because that's not
right.
Typical.
Right.
You guys won't believe that, but that's where I'm coming from. And took them a while to get around, and I'm not sure they fully ever believed it. Because
mm-hmm.
I never traded.
Mm-hmm.
Not one time in 20 years. And I figured you get on that trail and you're on the wrong trail.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, you have you with mine, and I'm ready to not interrupt you.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Let's talk about making legislation. So let's talk about your time in the legislature. first question, how long did it take you to really understand taxes, revenue, those kinds of things that eventually, you know, as we were just talking about, you really knew by the time you became governor? Was that a single time on the right committees, or was it over a series of years, and by, say, 1967 you had it down? I mean, talk about that process of really learning how the tax system worked and how all that came together.
Well, to start with, of course, my relationship to taxes were was a retail drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
That's before I got in the legislature. I didn't, as a freshman, you don't really ask, I want this committee, and I just happened to be put on the committee. As a matter of fact, they put me on food and dairy, too.
Well, there you go. Washington County at that point had dairy farms fairly nearby.
We were sitting, now I say we, because there was three Republicans and maybe six Democrats mm-hmm. on the committee. Doug Hyder, myself, and Grant's Pass, Bristol,
mm-hmm.
Bristol. Well, he was a two-termer, so to us he was an expert.
Yeah.
I'm going to get into it. So, but the point was that I was willing to ask a question.
Uh-huh.
Somebody don't ask questions. I said, "Doug, I'm going to ask questions." So I asked a question, something I didn't understand. And it just sort of developed that taxes are not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simply a matter of who's going to pay the tax.
Right.
That's all. Now, when you get to who, then you got to figure out how we're going to get who. And so when people try to make taxes complicated, I'm not looking that way. We spent a long time on basic school support. It was mm-hmm. a formula.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a long, had many runs.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew to start with it wasn't going to go anywhere because I'm no different than anyone else on the committee. We had this full run and how many pages. Where do I go? Washington County. How does it affect people in the school district?
Right.
How does it affect Hillsborough? And everybody else on the table is doing the same thing. So you pretty soon you realize that that's just the nature of things. That's what you do. And now, years later, Ted, I believe, appointed me chairman of a committee to really work over taxes. And we had probably the best, brightest people that I've ever worked with. And we had testimony, and we had some of their own ideas, and then we're winding up, and we're really, as you would expect, hardly nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
One of the committee members, a very bright woman, an engineer from Corvallis, she and her husband. And as she said, "Gee, I wish we could have come up with something different," I said, "Sorry to tell you, but there isn't anything different."
Mm-hmm.
And when I appeared before the legislative committee, I said, "Don't study this anymore. Study the studies."
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of studies. And they're studying it now.
Oh, yeah?
Don't study it. Go look and see what others have done. And you'll have, like, I had a really great report that got little attention. And John Gray was my chairman. And this was on power.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, go, and I had different subcommittees, wind, water, wave, And they had different committees in their report.
Right.
And it was a really a good, very good, well done. John Gray would, have, of course, have it that way. Nobody ever looked at the damn thing. Nope. But again, leading up to is there was two objectives. Are we going to get enough power out of that? And how much is it going to cost? And what do the speed bumps mean? Can we get it
right
passed? And that, those were the criteria. So it was always being, you know, we can thrash around all we want, but can we get it passed? You got to be smarter to figure that out. And you got to know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, how did I learn? Just a little at a time. And then pretty soon you learn, for example, some of the maneuvers. These are not mean. We sat there an afternoon with Dick Hyman, chairman, working on a text. I've forgotten what it was. And we were getting nowhere. I said, Dick, have a recess. And we went to the gallery and sat there and said, Dick, I know what you're doing. You want to put the tax on a Republican bill. And it ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you can go all the way, but it's just not going to happen. And we came back in the room, and it wasn't 45 minutes. And we
mm-hmm.
did. So, you know, but that accumulated that kind of mm-hmm. sensitivity.
Yeah.
Anyway, it didn't come bang, but I did read the annual report of the Department of Revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to make the top 10.
But it certainly is not.
And so then I discovered there's X number of people that make a lot of money, and there's a whole lot of people that make a lot of money and some that don't. But whenever you look at the taxes, you and me, there's more of us than anybody else. What you call the quote wealthy.
Right.
You could take everything they have.
Yeah.
That's not going to balance. It's not going to balance the budget.
Yeah.
Because there's more of us at the dollar than there is of theirs. There's a million over here. So you always have to deal with that segment, and as fairly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew more directly. I said more than you want to hear. It doesn't come, you know, like lightning. But I asked questions, kept my eyes open. I was in the retail, and I saw how that was going.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon realized it wasn't that complicated. And then it happened.
At what point did your fellow legislators start saying, you're the tax guy? Was that when you got, you know, your second term or third term, so it was seniority? Or was it expertise? You know, enough of these meetings where you're saying, you know, this is the way it works. When did that...
Well, I was in the House. Clarence Barton was the tax guy.
Mm-hmm.
He really was Clarence Barton. Did you know Clarence at all?
No.
Yeah. I served, he was chairman for two terms and my three terms, and then he became a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was busy doing something else. And I presume that were the case. Clarence was there, Clarence was the tax guy.
Mm-hmm.
But when Clarence left, there was really only one person, that would be me,
that
really knew and studied and understood. And so it was about third term or fourth,
mm-hmm.
or first term in the Senate or something like that.
Yeah. One of the things you just said, not in this answer, but the previous answer, you were talking about the fact that nobody reads all those reports. And if you want to figure out what's going on, just go back and read all of them and put together a big report or consume them. But you also mentioned, what are other states doing? One thing that's really struck me in Oregon, and in the past 10 years, say, it's really focused on how we talk about PERS. We only talk about PERS in terms of what Oregon is doing, not realizing that there's a recession. Other states are doing things, all these other kinds of impacts, which just are not part of the conversation here at all in any way. In your experience, how important is it to look at what other states are doing? And are there any examples of where you might have done that or decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to stick with an Oregon solution.
There would be some. How are other states doing it? The opportunities for doing it more would come at the annual governor's meetings. I push real hard for a meeting of just governors, no staff, nobody setting up. And we could, what are you doing about that? Well, I'm doing this, that kind of, and the staff doesn't want that. This is what they call gatekeepers or something.
Right.
They're afraid you're going to say something you shouldn't say. And so I never had that. But if there were anyone that stood out, then we would know. And it usually wouldn't be several states. It'd be one state doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would take a look. But there wasn't a lot of how are they doing. We were kind of, I don't know what you'd say. We're smarter than anybody. We were the first state to do a lot of things.
Right, right.
And so we just went ahead and did them. Sometimes, of course, if you really wanted to make it tougher or land use planning, if we wanted, other states are doing nothing, mm-hmm. we'd get some negative stuff instead of some positive stuff.
Yeah.
So it was tough enough as it is. There wasn't a lot, I'd say. More, there should have been more play, but there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
We were pretty independent.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's about all.
Okay. That's something that I'm going to explore with other people as well. Oregon, for instance, our constitution is based on New York Constitution. And, various and sundry things have been adopted. But at some point, almost all states say, no, we're in our own bubble. And it's just fascinating for me to watch.
Yeah.
So you're the expertise on taxes. You're in the Senate. Talk about that role when, there were only six Republicans in the Senate? So talk about that role when you were in the very tiny minority in the Senate.
Yeah, I'm going to hang on to that before I forget. That I was more following up on what we were talking about.
Something other states do.
Yeah.
Oregonians.
I'll see if I can remember because. It was a good answer, but let's get back to six senators. Among us was Wally Carson, Bob Smith, May, Ken Jones said to a point. Tony Meeker.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some pretty smart guys.
Yeah.
And we had been working as we gradually lost Republicans and our best work was work in committees, amending or holding bills back, or what I mean, rather than trying to beat something on the floor.
So just a quick aside. So with six Republicans, does that mean each of you has lots and lots and lots of committees?
Well,
so were you busier when you were in the minority
this? Yeah, and I've forgotten what, but I had, that was the year I had too many committees.
Right, I can imagine. Just trying to cover them.
I said, never again.
Right.
The other thing, and I said this is amazing, when you look back on it, Bob Smith became a congressman,
mm-hmm.
Tony became treasurer, Wally became chief judge.
Yeah.
I became governor out of six people.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable group.
But, you know, we were six, and so I suppose that the Democrats sort of treat us as puppies. By that, I mean, be nice. And, of course, there was no point in us fighting anything. And so we, on our own, did our work in committees, and we each of them were respected enough that we could carry in committee and we could debate it reasonable mm-hmm. on the floor, mm-hmm. and oftentimes we were carrying the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So we were no danger to the Democrats. And good friends,
mm-hmm.
so it just worked out. Obviously, we were trying to gain. The next session, we had seven.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. In percentage terms, that's a big group, big change.
And as a matter of fact, I have a pin I got made for those. The old gold pin that has a Roman numeral seven.
Uh huh.
There's only seven of those in existence.
Yep.
So we got through that period,
mm-hmm.
Always trying hard to do a good job. I was always a minority member.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to the Senate, the House went Republican.
Yeah.
But I was
And
the same thing is true. As I was working as a governor with the mm-hmm. legislature, I knew them and they knew me. Back to Texas for a moment, I would go down and testify, but they knew I knew more than they did, and I knew they knew.
Yeah.
So I went down there with perfect confidence and talking about whatever the subject was. Jason Bo and I got along together real well, although I went and shouted at him sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Closed the door and I'd shout at him, but we remained friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting experience.
Yeah. Shift to your early, still segment kind of the general tax area, but shifting to your early governorship. So you're elected the same year that California passes Prop 13. And so in Oregon, there had been talk about that kind of thing, movements toward it. And what eventually comes out of that is the kicker, is a way of dealing with that. Tell me about the kicker. And we'll start with just kind of where you think the idea came from and then how it began to catch on. Is it coming from your office? Is it coming from the legislature? I mean, where does that kicker come from?
That was actually done in 79,
mm-hmm.
kicker. My first session, when we came down with our budget, we saved $600 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say saved, it means we didn't budget to spend it.
Right.
which I thought was really neat, except now the legislature had money to deal with.
Right.
Jason Bowe may have been a real pusher of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be good for, the timing was when do you get the money, and you get it just before election time, you know, that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing. And so it could have been one of those things. It was not a good idea, but not so bad that I didn't, that I would veto it.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept going. And as a matter of fact, I don't object. If the people, send a dollar and that only cost 75 cents, then I think that 25 cents is mine.
Mm-hmm.
So they were happy on their side, meaning receipt side.
Right.
And the legislature was happy about handing out a check.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, well, business gets it, huh? How, you know, who creates the jobs? They don't quite connect that.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the fact that that's when we felt real good about, quote, saving $600 million.
Mm-hmm.
But it disappeared with it. That's where it was easy for the legislature and the kicker. And I have a feeling, although it wasn't on the inside, that probably Jason had a lot to do with it.
Okay. Okay. As you've seen the kicker, you know, through its iterations now over 30 plus years, there's a lot of talk now about changing the kicker. The people have spoken pretty clearly by putting it in the Constitution. but is this something, for instance, in government, a lot of times what happens is in the moment, it's the perfect time for a piece of legislation, but it doesn't sunset, and so it keeps going. And so a generation or two later, people look and say, what on earth are we doing this for? Do you think the kicker it was a great solution then that made political sense, that still makes sense, or is it one of those things that has taken on a life of its own that no one quite understands?
Well, of recent years, it isn't the same as having $600 million.
Right.
And so they had to reach, and they had the formula. It was within 2%. I don't know how they made up that bill. But as time moves, as you know, it becomes, instead of something that brand new and I'm getting a check, all of a sudden I am entitled to this money.
Right.
And so it's no longer a matter of generosity or good sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of I'm entitled to that my money. So it loses the flavor of what it was done about.
So as the attitudes change and the expectations change.
Yeah.
The purpose gets lost.
Those things, that's the way it happens over time. I'm trying to think of where this is, but I'm going to tell you that by that I mean I keep a script, I'll show it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Marini wants that so bad. there was less foresight now than there was when I was there. When we passed the moving the money over to taxes,
mm-hmm.
I mean the legislative state. Rather than property, that was a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem. When I say no foresight, okay, they've done that now. We've never paid property taxes I mean text, proper right. text, which is what we're doing now. And okay, and that was $1 billion. And now we've got that in our budget. But the foresight wasn't there to say, now we've got to do something about this. Because at that point in time, there was some easy, relatively easy money coming. It was not tight.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have planned the fact that you've got this loan that you didn't have before.
Right.
That's part of the problem we have. You add in Kitzhaber's health bill, another $1 billion.
Right.
Again, the idea was good, but nobody planned. We've got $2 billion we never had to spend before or budget for. So that's what they're scraping over there. I'm not saying they shouldn't. Either one should have not happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying, you should have done something about protecting yourself out there in the future.
Right.
And they really didn't, they lost foresight.
Mm-hmm.
They lost foresight to say, hey, we got a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know if I'd ever, because I like Barbara very much, and we get along together very well. I went in to see her before the session started, and she mm-hmm. was going to give her a speech. And I said, Barbara, you got to, before you come up with any tax measure, you got to assure people we got a problem. And as far as they're concerned, there's no problem at all. My taxes right. went down. So we don't have a problem. But she didn't even mention it. And she, remember, she was going to clean out the closet.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, you've got $1 million answer to $1 billion problem. You know, what? That sounds good, clean out the closet, but you know, you get the wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of it. But I don't know. That's foresight, two things. Lack of foresight or experience, whichever way you mm-hmm. put it. And how is this going to look at my next election? Are two very serious problems we have.
Yeah. When you look at the politicians that you've worked with over the years, and then still as kind of the grand old man, you know, talking to people after you've left office, by the way, one of the first things I put into my little thing here is your letter to John Kitzhaber about his jeans after his inauguration.
Oh.
I just love that letter. But in any case, do you see this lack of foresight? Is it something that's endemic to politicians, or is there a generational difference? Or were you and the people around you just kind of an interesting group that said, you know, we need to think about this in long-term senses as well as dealing with the short-term problem? For instance, were politicians in the 60s and 70s different than the ones now? What do you see?
I would say, Jim, fundamentally, that lack of experience or education, they look good, they campaign good, they sound good, but they don't have, like me, I've worked in a retail and in the legislature, so I was going to school all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see what was going on. Little things. Well, I was still in the house, and we had a sidewalk elevator at the Rooks. And somebody came by, inspector or something, and said, you're supposed to do so-and-so. What? Well, the legislature passed something. God, I didn't remember that. Out of 90 legislators, there was one no vote in mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sense of, it was nonsense. Well, I guess they're well intentioned. We do, of course, have some very bright people, mm-hmm. but there's not enough to hold the horses back, you know. I say that I worry about the fact that they don't have that. And maybe the most important part of what I told you, how is this going to look at my next election,
mm-hmm.
is probably the more powerful thing. And rather than how is this going to look down the road.
Was that the same dynamic 50 years ago as what you see now? Looking at that next election and how it
no.
looked?
It was some, to mm-hmm. a minor degree.
Mm-hmm.
And very few and to very minor.
Mm-hmm.
Not as pronounced, almost, I'm talking R&D now, how's this going to look at my next election?
Mm-hmm.
And no, that was not part of it. Not observing. They like to do things that would look good. Disliked to do things that didn't look good. But there was no staying away from the latter.
Right.
And no. Basically, I divided my career in the legislature for the first, let's say, 10 years. The first 10 years I ran the whole county,
mm-hmm.
and then the second 10 years were single member districts,
right.
and so the mail would come in legislator attended. You voted so-and-so on this bill. It's all paraphrasing. And I know you had a reason. I didn't agree with you. I'd like to know what it is. 10 years later. You've been dumb so-and-so. I'm going to get you. You'll never run again. I won't win. In other words, the tension from the outside
mm-hmm.
was fiercer.
Mm-hmm.
And less... The electorate I blame most often
mm-hmm.
to where we are. Nobody just walks in. They're being elected by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I blame the electorate more than the one elected. So there was a change. You notice that people walking up and down the street with placards, we never saw anything like that. We have a few people at the Capitol front, you know,
mm-hmm.
and yelling a little bit. They come down with a large delegation. We want to see the governor. And my answer is down there, love to see you, but we're not going to talk to a mob. You pick two or three of your folks and we'll make an appointment. But mm-hmm. I ain't coming down.
Mm-hmm.
they accepted that they, you know, now today, they'd say the guy would come, the legislator would come down. You can't discuss it. The mob has already made their mind up, and you're only one.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I worry, but my biggest worry goes to the East Coast. But my worry, of course, is a stronger, more honest with people.
Right.
Fewer non-answer answers.
Yep.
I went to Coos Bay. Got on town. Big to do. That they had word that they were going to build a Highway 42, which had been on every a new Highway 42. I'm talking to the writer. Forget it. It's not going to happen. Don't have the money. It's not going to happen. Well, that was the answer. someone else would say, well, I think we should look at that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so just escaped answering it. But the real answer was mine. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
I got burned in effigy.
Oh, yeah?
I said to her, I have now reached the zenith of my career. And I was in Charleston, and I had to do with fishing, and
mm-hmm.
we cut it off. They were angry. And I understood it, of course. They have boats and they have mortgages. And
mm-hmm.
they had already fished, but they wanted more fish. And but everything told us that that was the wrong thing to
do. Yeah.
So that's what we did. That's my election year.
Yeah.
I get burned in that.
Yeah. Yeah, these days nobody would do anything that controversial within at least a year from an election and probably 18 months. Just because.
Yeah, but they said, gee, you must have a lot of pressure. No. The only pressure you can put, the only one who put pressure on me is me.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can put pressure on me. I have. And if I think I'm doing the right thing, I said to our staff during the campaign,
mm-hmm.
when we closed it, I said, well, I guess we're just going to lose the county, but we did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, that year was Ted's year.
Yeah. So you won the county. What counties did you lose that year? Did you lose any?
I don't know. I got every county.
Got every single one of them.
I lost, with Clay Myers, I lost two counties.
Yeah.
But one of them was it Curry County? Brookings, I think so. I'd been campaigning, my first go-around now.
Mm-hmm.
And my co-chair, manager, and you know, lady had been with me all from day one. You got to go down to Zago Festival. Oh, March, I'm tired. And of course, I know diagonally. That's a long one.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, no, you really got to go. Oh, no, March. She finally gave in, and I lost Curry County. Never missed the Zago Festival. It's just one of those things that have, we let, both of us left.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, this is, you'll enjoy this. I doesn't have a tape to worry about. She worked out a deal where she's going to have a kind of a reception right across the street from where my office. And one block is the park.
Yeah.
And so she went through the bureaucracy and talked to the city folks and all that. And so she's setting up on that day. And all of a sudden, some other people start coming. And she got kind of angry. And what are you doing? We signed up for this. Well, one of the trailblazers.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot. One of the trailblazers is coming. But they gave it the name.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think of it in a minute. And she said, what's he running for?
Good.
And those are the little. Now, what else do you have in mind?
Well, we've gone, when you did your talks with Clark, you generally went for an hour, hour and a half. We've gone for about an hour. So you want to keep going for?
Sure.
Okay, great. Just want to make sure here. Let's get into things that I'm going to be spending a lot of time looking at in your governorship. I want to do, for your governorship, the overall, you know, what it was like to be governor and things like that. But the big things to me that come out are things that people talk about all the time. So there's Rajneeshis, there's the recession and things like that. But one thing, it appears to me, and in talking to you over the years, you share this opinion that you laid the groundwork for the rise of the high-tech industry, that change in Oregon's economy from being a timber-based economy to being not quite high-tech based, but certainly a broader, more diverse economy. Tell me about the thinking behind that. Was that driven by the recession? Was it ideas that you had, for instance, looking at tax bases? You know, where did those ideas really kind of germinate for you?
Well, it really wasn't a tool of a recession. We hadn't quite gotten there yet. But my first comment was, Oregon is open for business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm following up, come visit, don't stay.
Right.
And I heard that in Saudi Arabia, for God's sake. But anyway, and so I'm trying to change the idea that we didn't want business.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, all being a retailer, we did business with people that come and they want us to sell their carpet. And those that came fairly frequently, we would buy theirs. But if somebody came once, they probably would never buy it. It's just by constant contact. Mm-hmm. So I decided, well, I've got to go out and talk with it. And, but also being a retailer, where's our best market? I'm not going to go somewhere that is not a good market. California was Santa Clara Valley, and they were having a problem with personnel. People were robbing their people back and forth. And Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Taiwan and Korea. And so I said, okay, let's go talk to those folks. So when I first went, they knew a governor, they took well good care of me, but they didn't know where Oregon was. But the unitary, they would call it a unitary tax, it's a system within our tax. And they would not do business with any state that had that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, we got to do something about that. And so the whole idea was, I know that we need capital investment and creation of jobs for people. Not that we're getting shot dead in the timber industry, but we want to diversify our economy. That's what I was working on. Fortunately, we kept some of our timber industry, but that was mostly ruined by the people that don't want you to touch a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the joke on that one is about if it takes a young couple to create babies in the back seat of a Volkswagen and an open air moving, why does it take 2,000 acres for a spotted owl to do the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
But the point was we set up so that we were a good state to do business in. There was a feeling, a negative feeling among people about Oregon, inferiority.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I went back to the Midwest when they were going to come up with the new brand new car. They had their criteria. This is going to be the greatest thing, and they're going to have a factory, and they're starting a new car. So I went back there, came back, and at my media availability, why'd you go? And I'm saying, well, why are you asking a question like that? Why shouldn't I go? Mm-hmm. Oregon is as good a place to build that car as anywhere else. In other words, an inferiority complex that you aren't going to get it anyway. You're not going to get it if you don't go. So there was that we had to, just a mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really sort of tucked in ourselves. Where's Oregon? Well, it's between Washington and California. What governor went to Oregon wants to say that? But as soon as we eliminated the unitary system,
mm-hmm.
bingo, where's Oregon? And of course, all the advisors had to find out about Oregon. And Oregon immediately became known in the Condon, which is the major business association. And NEC was the first one, and even before we repealed it. And it's just that, you know, we had all the good things, but they didn't want our tax.
Mm-hmm.
We had transportation, we had a loyal workforce, we had a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Good land, good power, but we had a unitary system. So, as I told them, Jim, it was a matter not really of protecting ourselves because of timber. It was a matter of diversifying
right.
our economy. And being a businessman, I was using my practices. I went and called on them. I got to know them. As a matter of fact, I still have dear friends, I mean really good friends, in Japan and Korea and Taiwan. So it was interesting. When I went the first time, 79, I remember coming up out of the, from getting our luggage, and the media was all there. And what'd you get? And I said, it didn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they thought I went and got something and came back. I said, it didn't work that way, because I knew how it worked. And but I knew that we had to diversify, and it was because of the timber industry.
Mm-hmm.
I used this example, and it was true, that whenever there was, they were trying to cool down the economy, get too hot, so they'd raise interest rates. Then people would stop building.
Right.
Then they wouldn't buy any lumber to build houses. And the term I used was when they cool the economy down, Oregon would get pneumonia.
Right.
And so I'm thinking of that, and the fact that there was a negative feeling, and a lot of it is mental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk to Denny, you ask him about blowing up the sign. He loves to talk.
Yes.
God, I was serious. I mean, I wanted to put dynamite in it.
Yeah.
Governor, that's I-5. You can't do that.
Exactly. In your first trip to Asia as governor, you're establishing relationships, that's clear. But what products were you talking to them about? Was it, we're going to change the unitary tax so NEC can come in and start building? Or was it what we continue to hear when governors go, they really like our jam? Was it agricultural products? I mean, how, in effect, what worked in terms of getting Oregon's name out there in those early conversations?
Well, it was basically two things.
Mm-hmm.
When I first went, it was I would visit those that are doing business now.
Okay.
People buying our wheat, buying our lot. That's
right.
That was historic. That goes back to 1900 or something.
Right. So a lot of that's agricultural stuff.
We went there and talked to them, but at the same time, we thought, okay, but high tech really is
mm-hmm.
somewhere. So we started to talk to high tech. And pretty soon we would visit the flour makers and the lumber yards. But we would spend a lot of time with the high tech folks. As I told you, NEC was the first, and then we had Fujitsu, two Fujitsus, and then Sony Epson. Those are now there's more than that.
Yeah.
And I knew that once we get that happening, they would be hiring, buildings and hiring Oregonians. We've been doing business with them since I don't know when. I know that they were a market. We recognized during 1905 the Elizabeth Clark Fair.
Oh, yeah.
That Japan was identified.
Yeah, people don't really understand. Oregon's economy has always been a Pacific economy.
Yeah, but they...
And
they,
sometimes
they,
Europe pops up, but it's too far away.
Yeah, we had business with them, but it was always natural resource.
Mm-hmm.
Wheat, logs, lumber. I'll tell you one story. I went to a medium-sized sawmill in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say that, they employed 33 people. That was a medium size.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were mom and pop sawmills.
Yeah.
And so, as you know, instead of getting out of the car and going to the mill, you go to the office and drink tea and do all that sort of thing. And the number one guy said, and that young man over there spent 5 years in Oregon. Oh, isn't that wonderful? So anyway, we went to the mill. And then I had TV with me, and so they wanted to interview the number one guy. So while they're interviewing the number one guy, I'm talking to this young fellow. Oh, you spent time in Oregon. Yeah. Well, what did you do there? He said, well, I was buying rugs. I said, that's my business. What he was telling me, he was buying logs.
Oh.
Rocks.
There you are. Yep.
I finally got him, but he was buying rocks. And we didn't follow up that one.
Yeah, I can imagine. Another kind of attached to this, HP came into Benton County in 76-ish, 75-ish, and kind of started, you know, the high-tech boom here. I was growing up in Medford, and Medford was vying with Boise to be the next one, and Boise went out. But, you know, how much of a role did HP play in saying to the kind of the new high-tech world, Oregon's a place you can come and do business and then work on the unitary tax and things like that? But was HP seen, you know, from your point of view, did it make it easier to talk to people?
Well, it was, as a magnet, they were a magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Tektronix was a bigger magnet.
Okay.
Tektronix, as a matter of fact, had a joint venture with Sony.
Yeah.
And in Japan. And so we had those little things. And NEC, I mentioned them before, they came to Oregon before I repealed the unitary.
Mm-hmm.
They trusted me. I had a meeting with them, and they talked to me. And I said, well, what we can do, I planned to move to get rid of it. But in the meantime, you can escape it for 3 years. And we worked it out with the Department of Revenue, legally, while I'm getting this job done.
Mm-hmm.
So before I repealed it, they announced that. So it was even a bigger announcement. Because
mm-hmm.
they're one of the big companies in the country. And, but they came and, for the first time, built a building and hired Oregonians. And up to that point, they would buy our natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
And when they kind of follow one after another. The governor of Missouri, I can remember driving up to the hotel. He was there and driving up at the same time. I just had an announcement from Fujitsu on their two things. And he was saying, hey, leave something to me. I I think my personal character helped. I was not a pushover. I realized that these people had families, they have desires, they want to live in, they want children, and you know, they're human just like me.
Hmm.
People were, you know, just scared about foreign adventures, and I said, hey. And they're wondering about shaking hands or bowing. What's the worry? If they bow, I bow. If they put their hand up, I shake hands. I'll let them be the one that, that tells me what to do. And then you have to eat all the food that they give you or they'll be offended. Baloney. I don't eat everything at home. Why would I eat everything going back in Japan?
Right.
So I was not... I was flexible. I just, there's another human being among human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's cultural differences, but that's the way it is. So I think they also began to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would tell them was correct. That good labor force, loyal, bad force, good power, all the things that you use. And they liked it over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now we talk about something specific, high tech, but what I'm saying is that I'm a businessman. I was in the rug business, but I kind of consider myself a camp follower in the sense that, that I had to have a large company who will come in and hire people who will build houses, who will buy cars.
Right.
And so that small business people depend on the big companies. And it began to work. And it continued to work, and it's treated them well. Japan's had their up and downs like we have with that period.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been an excess. And similar, if you look at Kia and Hyundai from Korea and their automobiles. And, Taiwan still is a place that make things send to America.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mad rush toward China. I'm not a fan of that. I don't dislike the people. I just thought that I think they're more interested in getting our technology, and once they've got it, then goodbye.
Mm-hmm. It's also a sense that China's economy is so big and their interests are so global, a place like Oregon would just get lost.
Yeah.
Unless we have something. And the closest that we have is a lot of Intel chips, which quite frankly can be built anywhere. So,
well, that China's not going to come to Oregon to,
no.
to do anything like Japan did,
mm-hmm.
or Korea imported their cars mm-hmm. and that to our port.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, it worked well. As I say, it's just a matter of being... a human.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story. I went there after I was elected. I made very dear, close friendship with the head of Fuji Television.
Mm-hmm.
He's the top man. Mm-hmm. And we are, I mean, really close personal friends. And I went there after I was elected. And I had two or three days where I didn't have any evening deals, appointments. On a Friday, we went and had dinner with the folks. Very fancy place. I remember they had Degas and...
Mm-hmm.
And we were chatting before dinner, and I said, you know, it's been kind of easy. I didn't have anything for two or three nights, and I'd cross over from the hotel to this district, and in Japan, as you probably know, there's always these little shops.
Right.
you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that. That's, you know, the woman will come by and propose to you, want to sign you up. I said to them, God, I wish she hadn't told me that. I was there 3 times, and no women ever approached me. And we laugh about that. I didn't want to hear that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I made some good friends, but it's just been my successor. I went with him on the first trip.
Mm-hmm.
That was more generous than he would have ever been. I wanted, however, thinking about Oregon, to introduce the new governor,
right,
so there'd be a continuity. That was not his character.
Yep.
It's how's this going to help me? And they wondered about, why are you doing that? Because I want to continue this. I don't want to have a break. And I want them to meet you, and I want to be there to do that. But he was too much, how's it going to help me? He did several openings, but these were all in, kind of in line coming.
Right.
And following on that, there was not the same urgent feeling as I had about reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
We were very provincial. My goodness, we're provincial. And as I told you, we were kind of doubted about our state, you know, not being one of the big states.
Right.
But when I left office, when I started, we were competing against Washington, California, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado. We were competing against them. When we left office 8 years later, they were competing against us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had turned things around. We became less provincial.
Yeah.
And that helped us. Can you imagine if we hadn't done that, with the timber industry as the one thing to hang on to?
We look like West Virginia and the coal industry. Yeah. It would just be awful.
Yeah. So, now what?
Sticking kind of on this topic, but after you leave office, 20 years ago, NAFTA went into effect 20 years ago.
Yes.
And when that happened, one thing, once again, people in Oregon just don't understand these things. But before that, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, in some order, were our number one trading partners. But after that, Canada and Mexico become our number one trading partners. And those three shift to be number 3, 4, 5, 6. In your role as an international business consultant, did you see that happening? Did you shift so that you were talking to more Canadians and Mexicans? How did that work, you know, in from your office over the rug shop there as you were looking at the world?
Let me go to Greenbrier,
mm-hmm,
instead of a small retail shop.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the board. We have operations in Mexico. Now, some people say that shifts jobs. We did create some new for us, that is, cars,
mm-hmm,
tankers, for example, in Mexico. And we were able to begin competing in that area. It wasn't a matter about shipping jobs overseas, as the term they use. It was just part of the measure of getting into a market and being able to be successful in it. We're over in Europe, in Poland, and we have a manufacturer. Again, what I'm saying to you, Jim, is people don't understand. We remember, we're not doing that to avoid something. We're doing that in order to compete. In Europe and Mexico, as well as America. And so we're doing things that make us compete. Shipping jobs, for example, I can understand in the sense that this is a company that sells candy bars. But you can buy a candy bar made in Japan for a nickel, it cost Americans 6 or 7 cents. How are you going to compete?
Right.
So you go make your candy bar in Japan, and that keeps the American companies going. So the thing has gotten to be shipping jobs overseas. Boo. It's all part of the economy of keeping business going.
Mm-hmm.
Business, that's a term. Business is a non-entity. There's no such thing as a business.
Right.
What there is are people working in a building, and you know, it's not the business. We're talking about business. We're talking about jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. What's a corporation? A corporation, that's nothing. It's just, you know, it's there, of course, to help the company, but it's not something. It's the people that we're working in. I brought that to the legislature. I believe there needs to be more of it, but there's a competition that's hard to beat. That a guy like me, I had two brothers, so I could go campaign. It would be tough.
Mm-hmm.
But I go at night, and I try to cut into my work part as much as possible. But there are a whole lot of people who have no job. They can campaign all day, every day.
Right.
And I can campaign at night and maybe on a weekend. And I'm talking me, a guy like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to get this experience
mm-hmm.
into our legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes difficult. The single-member district was not good. When I represented Washington County, I was urban and rural, and so my interests were both. Single-member districts, I'm urban. I never thought that way because my friends were over there.
Right.
But that guy's rural, and I'm urban. And that firms up as you go along. And so you've got these beholden specific areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so single-member districts was not good. Sounds good, but it's not good.
Yeah. People don't remember, it's up beyond people's memory now. But there used to be states that had multiple member congressional district. The single state would be a district, and they would then elect their five who would all go. The downside is they can all live within one block. Upside is that they represent everybody.
Yeah, Washington County had 2.5 representatives
mm-hmm.
shared with Yamhill County.
Mm-hmm.
So we had half on some, he represented half. Yeah, we all have Washington, and then 2 full-time.
Mm-hmm.
We used to tabulate elections with adding machines in the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember that. And now you stay there a second because I want to show you this rearing binder that you're going to get it. I've saved stuff, all kinds, but there's one thing I want to show you.
Okay.
I made it. Took the chair out of the way. This book is things that I've saved. There's some of the jokes and some of the philosophy. There's some of the kinds of things. But in light of our conversation, I'm thinking of this. These things. An ounce of pretension is worth a pound of manure. Well, we have something
to tell you. As I've been thinking about how the book will eventually be organized and look, I've been toying with using little things from this as epigrams at the beginning of chapters.
That'd be fun. You know, that'd be great. This one, there's another one. You would know her, but her husband is a senator. I know him very well. He was very well known, nice guy, I like him. She went to work for my successor. A few months after I saw her, she said, "This job is tougher than you made it look." And I that's a particularly highlight.
That's a very telling and wonderful.
But there's another one in the speech. If I can find it. What it said there. Let's see. I don't know. I don't want to take too much of your time here. You can see there's all kinds of stuff. Some are philosophical, some are funny. My buddy and I said nobody understands our sense of humor. I found out after he passed away, by golly, you're right. We used to laugh at each other's jokes. Anyway, it was 1985, and I said that if we don't do something about property taxes, well, the worst thing, hardest thing, or I'm trying to remember.
Because 85, that's when we kind of had the series of the what eventually became Major Fives. They were talking about them. They began to hit the ballots and those things. Yeah.
Well, I won't keep it, but this is what it looks like, incidentally. And I've got things that really bring things to it. It says that the U.S. tax revenue was $2,170,000,000,000. The budget was $3 trillion. The debt is $1,600,000,000,000. But then it said, let's take all those away. And so the family income is $21,700.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets down to here. And here's another way to look at the debt ceiling. Let's say you come home from work and find there's been a sewer backup in your neighborhood, and your home has sewage all the way up to your ceiling. What do you think you should do? Raise the ceiling or pump out the crap? Things of that kind.
Uh-huh.
There's a quote. I last time I was looking for him with Murray, and within 10 minutes after she left, I found it. But basically it said that if you don't do something, Oregon will go through the terrible. This is 1984,
mm-hmm.
and it came out that way. That's a story. Maybe you want to dedicate it. I told the legislature, if you don't do something about property taxes, I'll call you back in special session.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting in the conference room with Ed Fahey, who was the Senate president,
mm-hmm.
and Eugene. Anyway, the Speaker of the House and then the Republicans. And we'd sit there in their conference room. And Ed was just determined to screw it up. So then we would adjourn, and I'd go out, and you know the situation in the conference room and reception, and the media's all on the reception. I don't have anything to tell you. And then we'd have another meeting. This happened 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
So the third time, I just had it. I knew what Ed was doing, and I said, usually you try to agree on something before
right.
you. I said, I don't care. I'm going to go out there and tell the media what I think should happen. And I'm all through talking with trying to negotiate with you. I'm finished. I walk out there and there's not a soul. Denny, now I've got something to say. And there was some controversy built downstairs, you know.
Yeah.
And then he tells, he said, I went up there and whispered to the governor. And pretty soon, they're quietly backing up, and the senators are watching this. You know, the media's not leaving.
Yeah.
They actually adjourned the meeting because there's no media there.
Right.
But Denny, I got something to say. the quote itself is in here. This actually, I don't know why I did it. Some of the things that appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to say, and it got to be quite a thing. And there are some jokes that wouldn't take too much editing. I did a little bit when I say that, you know, there's some off color or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll leave it in there. I tell dirty stories. What the hell is?
Yeah. You're an honorary caveman. That's what they do.
Now, Jim, what do you want?
Well, why don't we stop there for today? There's a lot of stuff. And do you want to plan for a next meeting, or do you want to wait till after the first of the year to just kind of peg that down?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
And I'm pleased that we're finally getting off. Oh, I would hope that Margie gets some attention.
Yeah, Jerry is doing whatever Jerry's doing on that. I don't know. I mean, all I hear through Denny is kind of what they're doing. I would love to, you know, if Margie's got interviews and things like that, I have no ego in this at all. I would love to be able to involve her or
only
do whatever.
That,
so.
Only that she didn't want her to, but came to me first, but got busy doing something else.
Yeah, yeah.
And we wasted about 6-7 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, however it works. No, no, you're the author, and I'm glad of it. Have she given you any of the?
No, she was at the party that we had, but I haven't seen Hyde or Hair ever.
I've got to call her then because I'll tell her that you are doing it and you're getting going, and she said that she was going to type it up and send it over.
Great.
And did you get the list of who she?
No. I have none of that.
I have it of who she interviewed.
Good.
There used to be a time I could get up and get it right away, but
well,
the garage is
full. That's okay.
But I'll get it and send it to you.
Okay.
I need your phone number and your email or whatever. Are you going to be working in the school or outside the school?
I'll be working both.
Okay.
Both. I'll give you, I got cards for both home and school.
Okay.
That works out.
But I will leave you alone because you are the author.
One is my home stuff, and then the white one is Pacific.
Okay.
So it's got everything.
Let me get.